Well, if you've been watching the news lately, you've been struck by the level and the magnitude of suffering going down in Haiti. You know, when it first hit, you know, you see that, or you see when the tsunami hit 4 or 5 years ago and killed 250,000 people. And it's quite amazing to see that much suffering. And when we see that like we did in Haiti, you just can't help. I hope you did. Pray a silent prayer, thy kingdom come, to speed the day of the kingdom to bring an end to this kind of suffering. But I want to entitle my sermon today, Why Does God Allow Suffering? Why is there so much suffering in the world, and God is a loving God? You know, I think intellectually we all probably can give a good answer because you've studied this material in the past, but I think we can do it in the light of all the things that are going on in the world. Why does a loving God not intervene and stop suffering? What's the deal here? Why is there so much suffering? There's a book called The Quest for God written by Paul Johnson. I have it on my bookshelf, but instead of bringing the whole book for a couple quotes, I have it written here. But it's an intellectual book if you like to read sort of a heavy intellectual more type discussion. He does this. He's a historian, but he's a very deep thinker. In a book called The Quest for God, he writes, I suspect that the problem of evil drives more thoughtful people away from religion than any other difficulty. Drives people away from religion than any other difficulty. And I think everybody struggles with that. We can do that intellectually, can't we, when it comes to such things as, all those people over there in Haiti, they live in a horrible country of an unrelenting poverty. We'll talk a little bit about that later on. But basically, the poverty is driven by greed and corruption by the leadership. And you find that through most of the world. And we'll find that much of the suffering of the world could be alleviated if people would apply some basic biblical principles. Not all, but much. But why doesn't God stop it? That's really our big question of the day. Why doesn't God stop it? And then we'll go from preaching to meddling. How come that God doesn't stop our suffering when we're in the church? We suffer too. Why doesn't God allow that? Why does God allow that for us? Here's another quote from a book called Religion Without Revelation. It says, just quickly quote a little bit of it. Julian Huxley is huge in the evolutionary world. If you've studied the evolution at all, you'll know that. Julian Huxley opined or mourned over that the existence of evil, and he said, the existence of evil is a challenge to God's moral character. He said, if God is moral, why does God allow evil? And at one level, that sounds like a valid question. If God is moral, why does he allow evil? If God is a God of love, why does God allow such misery on a planetary scale, on and on and on? There's an older movie. I think the title of it is God on Trial. And it's a group of Auschwitz inmates and these people are intellectuals and scholars before they went into the concentration camps. And they're just Jews. Some of them were not. But the point is they decided they were going to put God on trial. And they found him guilty a lot of things. So some of the philosophical arguments are in that movie, if you wanted to. I think it's called Putting God on Trial, something to that effect. Right? Well, let's consider a few things here again. It's interesting. This is from Webster's Encyclopedia. There's a lot of information, as you might imagine, of different philosophers and theologians and atheists discussing this issue. If there's a God, why is there so much evil? There was an ancient Gnostic writer by the name of Marcion, and he was a Gnostic, sort of a Greek mystic, back around 82 AD, and he had tried to address this issue. I said AD. I hope I didn't say BC, but AD. He says in his writings, there are two rival gods, one the tyrannical creator and lawgiver of the Old Testament, the other, the unknown God of love and mercy who sent Jesus to purchase salvation from the Creator God. So he says there's one evil God in the Old Testament. You find him, he likes to zap people, kill 25,000 when the earth opens up. And he destroys Sodom and Gomorrah. And then you find Jesus. And it sounds absurd, and it is. But actually that philosophy has morphed into what basically a lot of Christianity today believes about. The Old Testament was this harsh old God, and the New Testament was the God of love, sort of the two sides of God. And yet, we know that not to be the case. But it is something that is quite interesting. And as we'll go through here, as you know, we're going to talk about Satan and his influence on this thing. I've been reading some material. Some of it's hard to read, but it was written back, and I won't read it to you here, but it's written back in the 1930s. It was a handbook given out to communist agents that were going to infiltrate the Western nations. And among other things they were taught to do was, one, they'd take over the universities, they would take over the medical field, and they would take over the religious field. And one way they would do that is to debunk Christianity and religion. And it is quite interesting, as you read material from the 1930s, they've done it all. They've done it all. And we just are oblivious to it. Many in the church are oblivious to it. So it is quite interesting. And one of the key things is deflecting from the real source and deflecting it away. Isn't it interesting? Well, I don't want to get ahead of myself. We'll get into this in just a minute. Here's another study. It's called The Study of History Abridged. I'm glad, because the study of history takes forever. Here's another view of this question. Why does God allow suffering? We've seen some... Is that me? Okay. This is an Englishman, Arnold Toynbee, noted in his book called The Study of History. Quote, one of the conclusions that has been drawn by the human spectators of the moral evil of the universe is that this chamber of horrors cannot be any of God's handiwork. Well, that's, we would say, yeah, that makes more sense. This chamber of horrors that we call the world around us and all the suffering of the world around us can't be God's handiwork. Well, whose is it? How is it responsible? And even if it is someone else's responsibility, you know the answer to that, why does God allow it? That's the burning question, isn't it? That's the burning question. Why does God allow it? And then why does God, and we'll narrow it down to this eventually, why does God allow such suffering in His church with His own people? We have a lot of sick people in the church. Part of that is aging, getting older. Well, that's part of it. It's not all of it, though, is it? There are a lot of different things that go on in the church, a lot of different trials and emotional and mental problems, emotional upsets, we should put it that way. Why? Why doesn't God just stop it? Why doesn't he just stop it? Now, let's go to Daniel. The book of Daniel 2. Daniel 2. Daniel, the second chapter. And verse 21. Daniel 2. And let me start at verse 20 to get the story flow here. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are His. And He changes the times and seasons, so God is in charge. He removes kings and raises up kings. There's times and seasons for things. And God allows certain things to happen, and He doesn't allow other things to happen. He sees to it that certain people are put into power. He sees to it that certain people are removed. But He doesn't see to it to remove suffering. Not all of it. Boy, why? What about this God of love? How do you answer that question? A world that is just rolling in misery and suffering day after day after day. And now with television, we can bring it into our home in a new way. Now, most of you probably remember newsreels. Remember you go to the movies and they have newsreels? I'm old enough to remember it in the first several years of my life. I know none of the ladies are old enough to remember that. But you'd go to the movies and you would watch a newsreel for a while. Maybe it was, then it would be what was going on in Korea, the Korean War. Those of you a little older, you may remember some of the, during the Second World War, they'd show newsreels and then they'd go into some advertising and into the movie you wanted to come to see. But you didn't have it in your front room every day through the news. And now get it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Drudge report, computer, television, you know, all this stuff. It's everywhere. And it can be overwhelming, and it can be desensitizing, too. It can be desensitizing. All right, so here's a God that can change times. He can place kings and remove them. He allowed Hitler to come into power. You know? He allowed there's a little movie I didn't watch at all. It's just too long. But a movie about the attempt to assassinate Hitler before the end of the Second World War. And I'm glad it didn't succeed. How would history be different? You would still have Nazi Germany, most likely. Just different leadership. But God works that out. So he removes and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise, knowledge to those who have understanding. And that's what we're seeking here today, some understanding and some wisdom to address this issue. Why the suffering? Let's go to Daniel 5 now. Daniel 5. And we'll start in verse 18, Daniel 5. O King, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father, a kingdom and majesty, glory and honor. God chose and let Nebuchadnezzar, see, your father, gave him the kingdom. He read that that's what happens. God allows that. God saw to it that it happened. And because of the majesty that he gave him, all the peoples and nations, languages trembled before him. Whomever he wished, he executed. Now, did God call those executions? Nobody allowed this man to come into power. Now, we're going to go back to principles that you... God allowed the human race to be separate from his sins. Guy was put into power, and people could be executed at his whim. You look through history, that's the way it's always been. Whomever he wished, he could execute. Whoever he wished, he kept alive. Whoever he wished, he set up. And whoever he wished, he put down. So he gave this man that kind of power, this kind of leaders. God allowed that. Now, move on now to verse... we'll move on there to... time's already getting away from me. The reason God allows such suffering in the world, and he allows and sets up kings, he allowed Hitler to take place, but God allowed millions upon millions of people to die. He allowed Stalin to be put in place. And Stalin made Hitler look like a Boy Scout. He allowed Mao to kill some 50, they don't know for sure, between 30 and 70 million of his own people. And some of our current administration think that he's a wonderful leader, a wonderful example. I just couldn't help myself. Several of them actually said they admired him. It's 30 to 70 million people butchered. Now, God allowed it. Why? Can't God just take these people out and be done with it? Yep, couldn't do that. But he doesn't. Why? Why is that allowed? Just go to Deuteronomy. God has given every human being, whether called or uncalled, a special gift. It's a very special gift. We'll get more detail, but we'll find it in Deuteronomy, the 30th chapter. Deuteronomy 30. Verse 15. See, I've set before you today life and good, health and evil. God is saying this to Israel. And that I command you today to love the Lord your God and walk in his ways and to keep his commandments, his statutes, and his judgments, that you may live and multiply, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land which you go to possess. They just get ready to go over to the promised land. But if your heart turns away so that you do not hear and draw it away and worship other gods, and serve them, I announce to you today that you shall surely perish. You shall not prolong your days on the land which you go over to possess, the Jordan, to go in and to possess. I call heaven and earth, here's this gift, as witness today against you, that I set before you death, blessings, and cursings. See, life and death, blessings and cursings, opposites. actually a causal and relationship. For every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction in physics, that there's a cause and effect in life. And cursing before you choose, there's the gift. The right, the privilege, the God-given privilege for every human being to choose. Every human being from Adam and Eve have a human, I don't have to use the word right, we use that too flippantly, responsibility to choose. And he's saying to the nation, you have a choice. You can choose life, and both you and your descendants may live. Or, you know what? In retrospect, you can choose death. But you got to choose. And I will not force you to choose. You choose. That is a gift that is so precious, God will not interfere with that personal choice. Whether it's on a planetary scale or in your life. Interesting concept. Let's go to Matthew 22. Matthew, the 22nd chapter. It is something that is very, very important to God. Matthew 22, verse 35. I'm sorry. Yeah, Matthew 22, 35. I'm looking two places. Matthew 22. I never remember where this switch is. There's always one in the crowd, you know? You notice they always sit in the front? Well, on one side anyway. The sheep and the goats. Where were we? Okay. Matthew 20. By the way, he said, let there be light, in case you didn't hear that heresy. Matthew 22. Matthew 22, verse 35. I'm going to get there. You're probably all there with me, before me. Then one of them said, a lawyer asked him a question, testing him, saying, teacher, which is the greatest commandment of the law? And Jesus said, you shall love your Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. And this is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang the law and the prophets. Those are matters. And so we choose to love God and love neighbor. In our Bible study, we'll get into that a little bit. I wanted to cover this aspect, and in the Bible study, to cover that as well. Sort of dovetail the two subjects together. So is God free to prevent evil? Yeah, but He doesn't. And a lot of it has to do with our choices. We make choices, and God says that is a choice. Now, let's go to Ecclesiastes 3. Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. Now, did you know that... Yeah, we'll get into that another day. Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, verse 11. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 11. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He also set eternity in their hearts, in the hearts of human beings, and said that no one can find out the work that the Lord has done from the beginning to the end. You and I have had eternity placed in our hearts, and so has every human being. That's why no matter where you're at, human beings have a metaphysical interest. That takes all forms, whether it's any form of Christianity, to Buddhism, to Hinduism, to Muslim, to whatever, New Age. There's a desire in human beings to say, is this all there is to life? There can't be. There's something that God has put in us that's something that keeps searching. There's got to be more to life. That's why if you're rich or you're poor, you're still troubled by this. Sometimes you can be troubled to the point to where if you don't know where to look, you drown your doubt with alcohol or drugs or sexual activity, you name it. Food, it can be whatever. You just can't deal with the question. You don't know where to go to look, so you just medicate yourself so you don't have to answer that question because you don't know where to go to look for it. But in every human being is a desire to say, and we all have it, Is this all there is to life? I watched a brief introduction. I thought it was very well done by Billy Graham. It was about a year or two ago. He's 80. At that time, he was 80. And he got up and kind of laughed at himself. He's talking to some businessmen. And he brought up, he's dealing with his own mortality. He has all kinds of health problems and probably won't live too much longer. And he even said that. He said, I know my time is short, but that's okay. And I'm trying to remember what the whole point of this was. But he one thing he did realize is that there were some people, and he won't say names. He's known a lot of people. And obviously in the world, he's seen as a very big religious leader. And I think he's tried to live what he believes. I think that's respected by a lot of people. And one person, he said, without saying names, just didn't believe in God and had time for God all his life. But in the last several weeks of his life, he knew he was dying. He actually called Mr. Graham to come over and talk to him about the scriptures and the light because his own mortality came knocking. His own mortality came knocking. So I say this, there's no atheist in a foxhole either. You know, you're really praying when you're in that foxhole. Well, the foxhole of your deathbed, there's hardly any atheists there. But the point is, he had that deep inner desire to ask, is there more to life than this? And you can run from that question to being busy and working hard, and we said self-medicating, alcohol, whatever it is. A lot of people just debate that, but eventually they have to answer that question. God has put that in us. And he says, because that's there, we have this metaphysical interest in life. Metaphysical meaning we have spiritual interest. Now let's go to Genesis 2. Old story, we've heard it many, many times. But here God respected the responsibility and the God-given responsibility for Adam and Eve to choose. God could have stopped Satan from tempting them. He didn't. He allowed it. God was pretty sure how this was going to work out. He had a plan in case it didn't work out the way they had disobeyed. And we see here that God allowed the whole situation to take place because Adam and Eve had the responsibility. I'm trying to stay away from the word right. Again, we throw that around. But they have the responsibility to choose. And God did not stop them from choosing. Now, Genesis 2 and verse 9. And out of the ground the Lord made every tree to grow that was pleasant to the sight and good for food, the tree of life which is in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, Adam and Eve still were choosing, they still were exercising their responsibility to choose before they chose not to sin. Before they chose to sin, they chose not to sin. God said, I want you to, you can't take part of that tree. They said, okay. And God was instructing them how much time, we don't know all that. And so they were choosing to listen and to whatever level respond. They made a choice. And God said, good, you're making the right choice. You're listening. Then God allowed an alternate source of information to come in to challenge what God was saying. And they chose to listen to it. That's interesting. As we go through this, let's read it here, and then we'll come back and discuss it a little bit. We had this river and so forth. We'll get into all that. Chapter 3, verse 1. Now the serpent was more cunning than any of the beasts of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? Again, master of deflection. God didn't say that at all. But he's deflecting his question by making an accusation. Remember, that's one of the titles given to Satan. He's the accuser of the brethren. He's also called the destroyer and so forth. But he's deflecting his question and casting it as a blame on God right away. God's not letting you have any fun, is he? So now she had to, this is Eve, had to make a choice. She had to choose. God says, you've got to make a choice. You've been taught, but now you've got to make a choice. What will you do with that choice? And he's allowing another source of information to come in so that she can make a choice. She can choose to continue to obey, which would be the tree of life, or she can choose to disobey, take the tree of the knowledge of both good and evil, and based upon that experience, she would determine, as would her husband too, she would determine, based upon that experience, if it was good or evil. That's what it's all about. So she was exercising it correctly, the responsibility to choose, and then when given other altered information, she says, that sounds intellectually interesting. Now, Adam knew that wasn't the case, but he looked in her eyes and, oh, here, have that, and he caved in. He listened to his wife's voice and did it. You know the story. And really, God blamed him. He said, you should have exercised your choice as the head of the family and said, wait a minute, baby, this isn't right. Let's go talk to God about it. He would have exercised his choice, but instead, he did choose not to listen to God and chose to listen to her, and she had listened to the wrong source and made wrong choices. And God did not stop it. God did not stop it. Because that ability to choose is sacred. And He wants us, we can jump ahead to the conclusion and come back, keep building on it. He wants you and me and ultimately the rest of humanity to come to Him and obey Him because we want to, not because we have to. Isn't that the best way to raise your children too? First, they have to obey because they have to obey. But eventually, they get to the point where they obey because they want to. They see the benefit of it. But you have to teach them. Okay, so we get you know those principles. So God allowed Adam and Eve to sin, and then there were the repercussions. The human race is cut off. Paul talked about that. From one man, sin entered the world and death. And God said, because of this, you're the father of the race, and she's the mother of the race. This is what you've done. There are serious repercussions when you make the wrong choice. And we'll see sometimes in families, there's like generational decisions that are made, and they're passed on generation after generation after generation. And when God starts calling us into the church, it takes
many times, and you'll see that in the Old Testament, you're aware of it, I'm sure, two and three
generations,
usually three generations, to unlearn the mistakes of previous generations. So if you're the first generation, and you're going to start, oh man, I got to learn some of this of God's way. You're not going to learn it all to teach your children.
That's very rare. You'll learn a little bit and pass it on to your children, but
you will pass on most of the mistakes of your child rearing to your kids.
Then the next generation, if they've been taught to learn, then they say, well, Dad and Mom taught us that, but we have a lot of, but we've been now
the second generation in the church, and if they've been taught,
they'll take the good things they've been taught
and the bad things they've been taught.
And end up continuing to learn, and they'll erase some of the bad things and replace a little bit more good stuff. And usually it takes 3 to 4 generations to unlearn it. That's why learning and changing in these areas is glacially slow. You know, glaciers come and go, micro inch by micro inch. You just don't learn it by reading a book. You learn a little. And you move on. And that's why God's patient. It takes generations to unlearn these things. And we'll get into that as we go through here more. They had to choose, have that exercise, that freedom of choice. And so, we see that here. Let's go to Revelation 2. It's important to realize that they were always choosing. Before they sinned, they had chosen to be obedient. They had chosen to be obedient. At whatever level, they were obedient. Then when they were given altered information that was not given to them by God, that was intellectually tantalizing. Again, I've read to you some quotes. When people see suffering in the world, the knee-jerk reaction is, from people who really don't believe in God anyway, or they used to but don't anymore, the knee-jerk reaction is to what? The master deflection. They say, why does God not stop it? If He's a God of love and a God of mercy, why doesn't God stop it? Well, we just showed you in Genesis, God introduced them to right decisions or wrong decisions. They made wrong decisions. It's passed on. And again, the reason why is you've got to teach the human race to obey Him because they want to. But sadly, we won't get to that point as a race until we've suffered enough. And we don't do that individually until we've suffered enough. And that's called repentance. God allows us to suffer in our stupidity of our mistakes. Now, the question is, isn't it interesting? Master deflection of the question. If you ever watch a politician do that, I don't care what party they're in. Can you tell us why blue is blue? Well, the reason why we need to discuss why colors are important is because colors have all along the spectrum. And because spectrums are part of science, we need to make sure that we support science. Any more questions? What? And blue wouldn't be blue if whoever the last president or senator wasn't green or orange or whatever. Next, they don't answer anything. It's always deflected. Well, Satan deflects it. Why does God allow the suffering? It's His fault. Said by people who are atheists anyway. And that is a great excuse to say, so fully this idea of the supernatural and God, we're just out here to suffer and try to make the best of it we can. And that's all there is to it. Let's turn it around a little bit. Instead of that master deflection, why don't they ask this question? If there is a God and we have free moral agency, why doesn't God stop me from being stupid? Why doesn't God stop me from being evil? Why won't God stop and interfere with my ability to be sinful? He never asked that. Because the master deflective question is, blame God for the problem. Did God say you can't eat of any of the trees? He's deflecting. Isn't God the issue here? Isn't His request unreasonable? Well, now it's introduced in her mind. God just says, you just do what I tell you. You've chosen to do whatever He tells you. But you know what? Your information is limited. And I want to bring, in fact, this used to be what He was, a bringer of light. Later on in the New Testament, say they become promising freedom but bring slavery. Same spirit that's working there. But never do you ask people to say, you know, I really wish God would interfere with my self, with my my responsibility to be a free moral agent. Why didn't God stop me from being a free moral agent? They never ask that question. Because it's better to blame God. And Satan got Adam and Eve, well, especially Eve, and then we saw they blamed each other and so forth. And then Adam ended up blaming God too about how things went wrong in the garden. Well, the woman you gave me. Well, Satan deceived me. Well, God, you gave the woman to me. So ultimately, your fault. Remember, that's why He said, that's why He put him out of the garden. Not a breath of repentance. Just blame. Deflecting. Always deflecting. So maybe, again, some of these people who get a little closer, I read one of them pieces. If you look at this horror, what's that? How do you put it? Is that a chamber of horrors? You can't blame God for it. That's the truth, isn't it? He got a little closer to it. So I hope you understand this responsibility that we all have to be free moral agents. God says extremely important. And then He says, now live with that, with the consequences. All right, now, Revelation, I think I told you, 2 verse 7. Find this concept of the tree of life and so forth way back here. We read this in our last sermon. He who has an ear to hear, and let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes will I give to eat from the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. Referring to that all the way back. Just as I offered it to Adam and Eve, and for a while they were eating of the tree of life. In other words, they were making the, better put, instead of eating of the tree of life, they were exercising their moral agency, free moral agency, to obey. They didn't have the tree of life yet, immortality. But at least they were headed in that direction. And He says, now, go back to that. See, that's what's wrong. It happened at the very beginning, when the human race, through Adam and Eve, decided they would not listen. That doesn't seem fair. Why should what they did all those years ago, why does it have to impinge upon me? Because there's cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. Cause and effect. 2,500 years after Adam and Eve, somewhere in that area, God called the nation of Israel and said to them, "Hello, I'm God.
The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Remember them?
Somewhat. They kind of remembered. I tell you what, I want to introduce to you on a national scale, instead of just one individual in a small little tribe, I'll introduce to you on a national scale who I am and laws that you can live by. And if you do, you'll be blessed and you'll live a long life. Your things are going to work out a whole lot better for you. But in order for you to do that, you have to exercise free moral agency to obey or disobey. All right? Again, I'm just giving it to you in a real nutshell. But that's what it says. Deuteronomy 4. If I go to Deuteronomy 4 again. Did God force ancient Israel to obey? No more than He did Adam and Eve. Did the whole nation bless and be obeyed? If they obeyed, the whole nation would be cursed if they didn't?
Yes.
Deuteronomy 4, verse 5. Surely I have taught you statutes and judgments, just as the Lord my God commanded, Moses is saying, that you should act according to them, the land which you go to possess. Therefore, be careful to observe. Make a choice. For this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who will hear these statutes and say, surely this is a great nation and a wise and understanding people. Your choice will influence other nations. Not just people in the nation, your nation, but other nations. They'll see the wisdom of it. But you have to make a choice. Again, that is a God-given responsibility to choose. To choose. They have to choose. And God won't take that from them. Let's go to Exodus 19. Exodus 19. Now, Exodus 20, they're going to be given the Ten Commandments, so this is just before that. Exodus 19. And verse 5. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice, see if you have a choice. Why didn't God just grab them by the throat and say, you will obey me? You don't have a choice in the matter. What would be? Oh, well, He never gives us a choice. Why does God make us obey Him? Eh?
So? I worked on that line for a long time.
Okay. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, I'm God, you be my people, obey me, I'll bless you. That's how that works. Then you shall be a special treasure to me
above all the people.
Yeah, exceptionalism. Sorry. It's not racism, it's exceptionalism. You are to be the exception among all the peoples of the world so you can be a light and a guide for the rest of the world to come to know who I am. Because they've all been cut off since the garden. And you have to make choices that are different than all the nations around you. And as they do, you're an exceptional people if you do. Not that they were more righteous. They weren't. They were small, just free people from physical slavery. But I want you to be an exceptional nation.
And then by doing that, others can learn about me in these other lands. But you,
my people, must choose.
You be a special treasure
to me above all peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. That's what he wanted. I want you to be a nation to make proper choices. And in the next chapter, here are the Ten Commandments. These are the basics of the premises of all your decisions that you make because you are to learn to exercise this responsibility to choose. Choose based upon what? Information that I've given you. And also we know that Satan has given us information in the world around us. It hasn't changed, has it? Today, we still have to make choices. And these choices are always a cause and effect relationship. Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28.
Verse 1. Now shall come to pass if
you make a choice, not that I'm going to grab you by the throat and make you do it. You're here today
because you want to be. And I hope you're not here today because you felt you had to be.
Now, I guess if you didn't want to come, you felt like, well, I need to be here, so I'll come. But really, my heart is I'd rather just stay home, pull the blanket over my head and not be here today because I've had a rough week. And you came. Well, at least you made a choice. It's a good choice. But it was more out of duty than from the heart, wasn't it? Have we all done that?
Yeah.
From time to time. But most of the time we're here because, you know, we wouldn't want to be anywhere else. We need to be here. You might say, man, if I didn't go this week. Remember, well, we don't have a lot of those, but remember a couple of years ago we had like five Sabbaths. I think five out of seven Sabbaths we canceled because of weather. Remember that a few years ago? Can you imagine Lisa being stuck with me every Sabbath? All day long. Oh, she had to make a choice and she married me, so that's her. Like Leo said, she didn't want to go to a wedding real bad that day. So anyway. Now, verse 28. Now you shall come to pass if you exercise that God-given responsibility to choose, diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all His commandments, which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above the nations of the earth. Why? Because you are better than other people. I like the shade of your skin better. Not at all. Not of that at all. Because I want you to be a shining light, if I can put it, on a hill. I want people to see what happens when people make a choice. Now, we make imperfect choices, and they would too. But if they made a choice, we as a nation and we as people choose to obey God the best we know how. And where we need to be corrected, we'll be corrected. We want to obey God. He says, I'm going to put you on a hill for the whole world to see because I want them to learn to start making right choices. That's what he wanted. That's what he wanted. So let's see. God will set you high above the nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you because you made that choice to obey. You know, so I'm paraphrasing here. You made a cognitive choice to obey the voice of the Lord your God. Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the country, and blah, 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 the fruits and the wombs will be flourishing. You'll have kids. You'll have great crops. You'll have this. You'll have that. It's wonderful. It's all pretty physical because he's dealing with physical people. That's okay. It starts somewhere. You see, it all starts with the right choices. Well, verse 15, though, the same chapter.
But if it shall come to pass, if you make a choice not to obey,
that's your choice, individually and collectively. To obey the voice, if you choose not to obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully His commandments and His statutes, which I command you today, well, cause and effect, all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. I'm thinking about doing a sermon for the feast, because it actually says in Revelation, there'll be no more curse. I'm going to talk about, maybe use that in a feast sermon. So I'm not going to do that here. This is the feast. Anyway, but the curses shall overtake you, come upon you and overtake you. There's a cause and effect. Why? Why would God not just say, oh, well, you know, boys will be boys? Again, God had mercy. There is even in the sacrificial system sacrifices that would be made for unknowing sin. But this is a conscious effort of just forget it. God says, you get into that state, I'm going to punish you. Why doesn't God just stop it and say, now everybody, let's just take a deep breath. In a sense, he does that with the prophets. He gives them lots of warnings. And yet they usually kill and imprison the prophets because they've made a decision not to obey. And God says, you have that responsibility and I'm not going to take it from you. You have a responsibility to make decisions and live with the consequences. Why live with the consequences? Because in the end, God wins. In the end, people will learn or they will perish in the lake of fire. But most people will learn in just slow, difficult process. Most people will learn eventually. They will learn. But if you take the consequences for their errors or their actions away from them, they won't learn. So that's a big part of why God allows the suffering, because we've made wrong choices as a human race. And you and I were born into this insane asylum they call culture, society, the world around us. You sadly and I sadly were born into this nut house. And it is a nut house. People are crazy, spiritually speaking. And we're all a little bit
not three sheets to the wind, I guess.
However you want to say, that's it, drunk. Okay.
We're all spiritually drunk. You get the point? We all are affected by it. We're all affected by it.
So I always want to say,
you're crazy. First, I'm not. I'm the only exception in the human race. Now, you say, you're delusional. All right, so there we go. But the point is, we live in a world, and God says, because you've made wrong choices, live with it. I've offered your parents this, and they rejected it, Adam and Eve. And since the parents couldn't teach the children because they're in rebellion, the children never learned cause and effect. And it went on and on and on. Then when God started calling people, He said, I want to make a covenant with you, Abraham. I want to enter into a relationship with you and the kids that you'll have. Not a nation yet, but and if you do that, I'm going to bless you. And they did. And to the degree they do, it's blessed. We understand those things. But there were choices that had to be made. So much of the suffering that is in the world is a result of being born in an insane asylum called this world. All right, let's go to a little more direct here. Oftentimes, cause and effect are not acknowledged in our world today. Most sexually transmitted diseases would stop within one generation. 80 to 90% would stop in one generation if people would make the choice to obey God in the area of being faithful to their mate. You don't get those diseases if you have faithful to your mate, to the one person that you're married to. They just don't happen. Anything, God set that up. But somehow when you mix, I don't get too detailed here, bodily fluids from various and sundry folks, things happen. When we as a human race indulge in deviant sexual activity, male with male, so forth and so on, without getting too detailed, again, things happen. Because wrong choices were made, cause and effect. Now, did God ever stop people from exercising that free moral agency? You never hear people say, why did God not stop me from exercising my free moral agency? He should have. And if He had, they'd be griping about that. Because it's in the heart of people to be foolish. It's in the heart of people to be sinful. Let's go to Galatians 6. The principles here. Galatians, the 6th chapter. So we see it on the planetary scale. Now we're going to start narrowing it down. So we go from preaching to meddling now. Galatians 6. Here's the principle. Galatians 6. And we'll start in verse 6. Let him who is taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches. And do not be deceived. God is not mocked. But whatever a man sows, he will also reap. This is in the Old Testament. You can look it up. That principle's there. It's nothing new. It's in the Old Testament as well. So he's saying here, cause and effect. You will reap what you sow. Now, some of you, when you're in your working careers, you did not know. It wasn't a result of sin. It's a result you didn't know. Or maybe your employer knew about it. Some of you have COPD, emphysema, and other things. Not because you sinned. Someone else did, and maybe didn't tell you, or you just didn't know. You worked in an environment around asbestos and other things, and you got this and that. Now your lungs are bad. Still, cause and effect, even if you don't know about it. So that sometimes these things come upon us, and it's not our fault. It's not that we did. Sometimes you're born with certain genetic proclivities. Heart disease can be in some families. Diabetes can be in some families. But other things, breast cancer, blah, 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 you name it. And depression can be genetically passed on, so forth. But there's always that little word, isn't it? There's other things that we can do if we're genetically predisposed to these things. There's still decisions we need to make to lessen the impact or the possibility that that can come to us. If we have a predisposition to diabetes, you've got to lose weight. But you choose. High blood pressure, you choose. God's not going to make you. I wish God would make
When I
eat wrong, I wish, you know,
I want to eat wrong, I go to the table, because she's not there, so that's why I eat wrong. And I want to eat chocolate chip cookies. Mm. Why doesn't God, it's God's fault that I ate that chocolate chip cookie, because He didn't stop me. I can't get it up. God won't let me eat that cookie. Why does God interfere with my free moral agency? That would be my cry. I'm being silly to make the point. Many times we suffer because we continue, even as God's people, to sow bad seed and get bad fruits. See, I told you to go from preaching to metal. And I'm talking to me. See? You've all heard stories. I maybe even shared them with you. People who were in high school and went into college or should have gone into college in the 60s. Didn't go to college in the 60s because they knew the end of the age would be in the 60s or 70s. So why go to college? And so they didn't go to college. They got secondhand jobs, you know, not top jobs. They didn't really think education was important. And that was a choice they made. Did God stop them from making that choice? No. Sometimes bad advice was given. Did God stop the bad advice? No. See, free moral agency is a precious responsibility. And so those people got jobs that they just don't call for anymore. I'm, 57? And I can remember, so if you're younger than me, you probably don't remember that. But most of you do remember. When you stopped for gasoline, three or four guys would come out. One guy would be pumping gas, another guy would be under the hood, another guy would be checking your tires, another guy would be washing the windows.
How many of you remember that?
You just told me how old you were. Now, when I went to Oregon last year, whenever it was, I guess it's because they're desperate for jobs there. I went to self-serve, you know. And I got out, and the guy came out and says, you got to get back in your car. Well, I've been 30 years since I've been to Oregon. Give me a break. You can't pump your own gas there. That way, give somebody a job. Which is okay, fine. And gas is a little more expensive there because you're going to pay for them and so forth.
But the point is,
very different world.
Very different world.
We make bad choices and the repercussions last, don't they? Didn't go to school, didn't get a good education, so I settled for a second job or second rate job, whatever. I didn't do the right things, whatever it may be. You sow, you reap what you sow. You reap what you sow. All right, let's go a little bit further here. I'm not going to turn there, but just refer to it. Job 4, verse 8. Job 4, verse 8 reads in partiality here. Those who plow iniquity sow trouble, reap the same. That's basically what we said in Galatians, isn't it? It says it's in the Old Testament. Let's go to Proverbs 13:15. Proverbs 13. Proverbs 13:15. Good understanding gains favor, but the way of the unfaithful is hard. See? Every prudent man acts with knowledge, but a fool lays open his folly. Choice, choice, choice. What choices you make? Again, working with fellows in the prison system, most of them never get this. They cannot see cause and effect. It's always somebody else made them do it. Somebody else has it out for them. It really wasn't me. It was a bad judge. Whatever, whatever, whatever. Now, you and I say, well, it was my parents. Maybe it was. But you still have to make choices at that point, don't you? Maybe you had a bad, maybe you had a great parent, maybe you had a lousy parent. You still have to choose. Maybe you had two lousy parents. Who knows? You still have to make choices. And you can choose. I had bad parents, man. That's why I'm going to be what I am. Okay? And you know what? God will let you do it.
He will not stop you.
Because He has put that gift of free choice. And He says that is so special. Because in the end, He knows He's going to win. He's going to teach His character. But oh, the destruction that can occur when we make wrong choices. But even in that destruction, God is sowing the seeds of repentance ultimately. didn't he, with you?
So he brought every one of us to a certain point through various points in our life where we were ready to come and finally lay down our excuses, whatever they were. Whatever they were. Lay them down. Here's an interesting quote from the book, The Lessons in History. The causes of war are the same as the causes of competition between individuals, of pride, the desire for food, land, materials, fuel, and mastery. In other words, that's the people go to war for those. They want mastery over others. They want raw materials, so forth and so on and so forth. Why World War II that way? Germans wanted living space. I don't remember the German term for it. And anybody happened to get in the way? Too bad. The Russian people were not seen as humans. They were just seen as slaves, the ones that they would not be killed. And they would just be slaves for the German people. The Japanese wanted to spread their empire, and they needed oil. And they needed, and we didn't want that, so we cut their oil off. La-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Just change the names and change the centuries. It's the same thing. So it's like James 4. Let's go to there real quickly. James. James, the fourth chapter. God is talking here to the church, but it's true as in a congregational level. It's true as on an individual basis. It's true on a national basis, the principle here. Verse 1. James 4, verse 1. Where do wars and fights come from among you? He's talking to the church. But again, the principle doesn't matter. It applies to everyone. But choice is being made again. Do they not come from your desires for pleasure, making certain that war in your members? There's a desire that's out of control. It's warring in your members. And again, nationally or not. And the Japanese saw Chinese as a secondary human beings. And so you had the rape of Shanghai or Man, I can't remember the name of it now, where they were killing hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children because they just weren't seen as human. And wrong choices being made all the way through. You lust and you don't have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and you war and because you do not ask and so forth and so on and so forth. And he says that's all to go down through here. That's the spirit of the world. You can't be a child of God, a friend of God, and have that same spirit. So again, how do we keep away from that? By making proper choices. Now let's talk about us a little bit here as we conclude this. We make choices every day. And I've sort of alluded to them already. And again, most of us are not in this area of our lives. But teenagers make choices now that they will live with for the rest of their lives. But it's so difficult for them to understand that because they haven't lived long enough yet to recognize cause and effect, that relationship there. That when they exercise that free moral agency, God won't stop you from taking drugs. God won't stop you from having sexual relationships with somebody else. He's not going to stop you from that. But you've been given an opportunity, since we're talking to our young people here, you've been taught, here's the truth, and the world says, no, you decide. And you now have a choice. What will you do? Study the history of the human race and see if you can come to a different conclusion than the one I say to you is that the human race makes the wrong choice over and over and over. And again, not talking about anybody here in this area, but I've counseled people, I've mentioned it before, but I want to say it again. One person in another area many years ago was in the hippie movement, free love, where they had sex with multiple partners in one night and blah, 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 blah. And that person still has nightmares and deep, deep sadness about what has happened. And it affects her marriage. 30 years, 40 years after the event. Cause and effect. Did God stop it? No. Did she repent? Yes. Are there repercussions? Yes. See? Choose. Make the right choice. It's a God-given responsibility. That's why parenting is so important. You teach your children how to start making choices. We've talked about that in the class that we had with them. Again, that we start with the young people in that way. Choices, and you will be made. And most of the time, you can find a way to do what you want, and mom and dad won't know about it. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. You can get it done. After all, you are being kept from knowing good from evil. Right? That's the argument. What's the old lady know? What's the old man know? Same as the Garden of Eden. The argument never changes. And you know why you're not having fun? The old man won't let you do it. See? Well, God is keeping you from it. Your dad's keeping you. Your mom's keeping you from it. Blah, 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 blah. See? Same story.
All right, let's talk to adults. We talked about this again. Jesus says you always have the poor with you.
So some rationalize, all right, don't worry about it then. Since Jesus said I was going to be the poor, I don't care. I guess, why is that? Because generation after generation after generation, people will make dumb financial decisions. And usually they pass on from family to family. It goes from generation to generation. They're not taught. If your parents don't know how to do it, how can they teach you? So, unless you want to break that cycle, you have to go learn principles. That's how that works. It's really not rocket science. If you don't know, you don't know, and you keep making mistakes. And people who maybe even know, they get away from those principles, and then you get in trouble, and they repent and they make changes, and that happens. Again, we said sometimes people don't get a proper education, so you pay the price for it. You know, that's one thing. Now, let's talk about health choices. You and I make choices every day. What will we eat? It's up to you. God will not stop me from having that chocolate chip cookie. It's His fault. He will not interfere with my free moral agency. I wish He would. No, I wouldn't. Then I'd say, I want that cookie. And I'm being denied the experience of the cookie. How much more wisdom and joy would I have if I just was allowed to have the cookie? But no, He won't allow me to have the cookie. Instead, it works for me as a human race. I'm trying to show you the example. The human race says, God won't let us. If God is a loving God, why does He allow us to have poison cookies? Well, we may get poison cookies. The real question is, where does the poison come from? And we know the answer is coming from a demonic area. What kind of choices do you make physically for yourself? What kind of choices do you make physically? Church is not going to give you a list of things you should and shouldn't. The book Bible is going to say it's clean, unclean foods. And if you think that's all it is to be healthy, you're wrong. Well, we're not going to have a litmus test when you go to the kitchen, here or at home. You've got to choose. And no one else is going to say, oh, what are you eating that for? I shouldn't be doing that. You've got to choose. If God's not going to be over your shoulder telling you, hey, who are you to do? Leave them alone. They can make the choices and live with the consequences. It's just that simple. Choose and you have life. Now, again, we've physical things, psychological things. So sometimes you're born with, as we said, proclivities. If you have a heart problem, those kinds of things, cancers can be passed on from generation to generation. You have more proclivity. Okay, well, I got a genetic proclivity to it. So I just, it happens. You've all heard this. Maybe you said it if you smoked one time. Hey, we all got to die of something, so I'll smoke and die of that. Okay? Choose. It's your choice. And you know, God won't stop you from having a smoke. And as you get sick from it, don't ask, why does God not heal me? Sorry. Cause and effect. Sometimes these things are not that difficult, but we don't want to see the solutions. On a human, national, humanist scale, down to us personally. That's why we have that so much suffering. Wrong choices, and we continue to make the wrong choices. And God says, I'm sorry, I've told you how to do these things. I've given you the basics. Choose, use that gift of choice and choose to live. That's really what He wants us to do. You reap what you sow. I reap what I sow. You notice when you get older, you start reaping more?
You can sow some of those things. They'll say, sow your, in your youth, you can, you think you're getting away with it. You're, again, just on a very rudimentary scale. You see these guys on these skateboards and they ride down the rail on a stairway and boy, they are men. You don't see women doing that. They got more sense. You see guys doing it and they fall off and they break an arm and it's sitting there gangling and the blood is pouring out and they're going, I'm a man. Look at me. And they go and they just want the old doctor to wrap that up. And I'm a man. I'm going to go out there and do that again. See me in 20 years, bub.
Oh, can't move. Go talk to football players.
They can't walk. They hardly know. What? Wrong choices, guys. Wrong choices. Made wrong choices. And then all along, God did not stop you from doing it. Don't you think common sense would tell you trying to ride a skateboard down a handrail is not exactly the Einstein move? Yeah, but I'm a man. 30 years later, I hurt, and I don't know why God made me hurt so bad. Anyway. So, we want to learn to make life work. Well, I brought a box of our booklets, Making Life Work, even though it's pretty basic stuff. We'll bring it out after church. I hope every one of you will get your own
copy. You may already have it at home, but get another one so you can mark it up. And reread Making Life Work. It's I brought it here for you. And it's some extra booklets to resupply our table. Get that book,
Making Life Work, very rudimentary,
but go back to those things.
And realize you have a choice. Every day of every minute you have a choice. Choose life, not death. Choose life, not death. Now let's go to Proverbs 3. Proverbs 3, and we'll conclude here. Proverbs 3, verse 1.
Proverbs 3,
verse 1. Now the whole point of the Proverbs, it says in Proverbs 1, verse 1 through 3, in essence is to teach young people, it says young men, but it's women too, but to teach young people, if you read through the Proverbs and the Psalms, you're going to see these principles of life codified in there for you. Principles all throughout here. Choose to listen to them and it will make you wise. It says way beyond your years. Alright? Now, Proverbs 3, though, I want to go to Proverbs 3, verse 1. My son, you put daughter, or my child, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commandments. See choice? You must choose that. For what? For what? If you do that, what will happen? Keep your heart and keep... But let your heart keep my commandments. Why? What will be the result? For length of days and long life and peace, they will add to you. It works. It works. It'll add to your life. Cause and effect. Satan is the master deflector. He's the one who's inflicted this world with its confusion and its pain and its anguish. And he's got the world either believing it's God's fault, oh, there is no God. And they don't really, people don't focus. There's this evil side of the spirit world which is out to destroy the world. They don't see that. And if there is any kind of deity, clearly he's not much of a deity because he's allowing all that to happen. It's his fault, the master deflector. Satan is the master deflector. When really, it's Satan's fault. And then we have to make choices not to be victims of that anymore. So keep that in mind. We reap what we sow. And then we, you and I, God is using us to break this chain in our lives now of the bad repercussions of sin, breaking free from much of the suffering of the world. We can be made free of a lot of that by making personal choices in our lives and being an example to others as the world looks at us. All right, we'll have another congregational hymn and conclude services.